Brought to you by IBMPressBooks.com, part of the On Podcast Network at informit.com/podcasts.
Welcome to the IBM Press Podcast Series with Sandy Carter. Sandy Carter is Vice President, SOA and WebSphere Strategy, Channels, and Marketing at IBM, where she is responsible for driving IBM's cross-company, worldwide SOA marketing initiatives, and in this role, helps oversee the company's SOA strategy across software, services, and hardware, and sets the company's SOA marketing direction. Sandy has played a critical role in helping to identify SOA acquisition targets and ensure the successful integration of these organizations into IBM SOA portfolio. Additionally, she directs SOA messaging and content, leading a global team in driving customer demand for IBM and IBM business partner SOA solutions. Sandy holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Math and Computer Science from Duke University and an MBA from Harvard. She is the author of The New Language of Business, SOA and Web 2.0, published in 2007, and the author of the upcoming book due to publish in 2008 called The New Language of Marketing, Screaming Angels, both published by IBM Press. My name is Greg Wiegen, and I am an associate publisher for Pearson Education and editor-in-chief for IBM Press. This is the second of three podcasts with Sandy, and in this podcast, we will discuss what SOA means for organizations of all sizes all over the world and take a closer look at some of the growth opportunities for SOA. Welcome, Sandy.
Thanks, Greg, and thank you for having me on, and thanks to all the folks for listening today.
Absolutely. In our first podcast, we talked a little bit about SOA and Web 2.0, and in this podcast, we wanted to focus on a little bit about what SOA means for organizations of all sizes all over the world. And so when you talk about entry points, Sandy, you're talking about starting points or getting in, getting a company up and going with SOA?
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked about service-oriented architecture being a combination of business and IT with kind of the S standing for service or a business task. Obviously, there's also the A in the word, the architecture. So what we looked at was how do we take this alignment of business and IT that's so prevalent in SOA's name, if you would, and how do we make it easy for customers to get started? You know, back in 2005, when everybody was interested in SOA, we did a lot of education on what it was. Now we're trying to help people figure out where's the right place to start. So data mining our 5,700 customer engagements, we found that about 80% of them started in one of five ways. The first was around a particular process, so a process entry point. They had a particular pain in opening a new account or gift registry, and they wanted to focus on SOA to help fix or alleviate that pain. The second major entry point was around information. How can I have a single view of my customer, of my product, of my employees, and how can I make that more effective for making better business decisions? And the third was around people. People was a really big one. In fact, Gartner said about 50% of companies started with a people entry point, and that was how can I use SOA to make my people more effective, more efficient, and to feel more in control of their work environment. Those are really what we call the business-centric entry points, very focused on the business. Now, on the IT side, on that A side, there are two fundamentals for starting with SOA. The first was around connectivity. So once you create all these services, all these business services, whether they're around people or process or information, how do you connect them together? And that was around an enterprise service bus. And then the second major IT-centric entry point was reuse. Greg, as we talked about earlier, reuse is so powerful. You don't have to rip out what you have in your environment to use SOA. You can reuse your current SAP apps, Oracle apps, Microsoft apps, or even custom apps. All those can play. So it's really figuring out not only what can you reuse in a portfolio analysis, but also what services can you build and how can you make them reusable services. So, Greg, those five entry points, people, process, information, reuse, and connectivity, are the ways that most customers today begin their SOA journey.
Another concept that I hear about with SOA is that of governance. Can you explain a little bit to us about what governance, SOA governance is and why you feel it's so important?
Yeah, Greg, that's a great question. In fact, one that I get all the time. Governance is a secret sauce for every customer that I've seen that's been truly successful in their SOA deployment. So governance is really very simple. It's all about establishing a set of decision-making rights and setting up the right mechanisms and policies to carry those decisions out. So examples are, how do I fund a service that's now a shared service that stretches across multiple divisions? How do I communicate a change to that service that is now shared across multiple areas? How do I maintain the quality of service and make sure that I am measuring the right things now that I've got a service that is, again, used in multiple ways? So SOA governance is really about defining the right decision rights, making sure that you've got the right owners for high-value business services, managing those services, and then figuring out how to measure the effectiveness of those services. Obviously, keys across all those five entry points.
Okay. And so, you know, with governance, and we talked a little bit about the entry points into SOA, I'm sure there's a lot of areas that can kind of trip a company up when it comes to SOA. Can you give us just a couple of top things to avoid when it comes to SOA?
Yeah, so that's a great question. What don't you do? The first one is, don't think about SOA as just a technology. It's really about the way you do business, and it helps you transform the way you do business. As we've looked at, you know, over 5,700 deployments now, this is a critical success factor, getting the business involved, getting technologists together. In fact, I was just at Harley-Davidson, and a great story where Jim Haney, their CIO, was telling me about their SOA project, and they're trying to pull in the business. And it wasn't until the business really saw, you know, modeling a process and being able to simulate that process and move it around, that the business got involved. And then their projects have just catapulted in terms of their results, because it's now about not just the technology, not just cool technology, but the way you do business. The other key don't is, don't throw everything out. There's a lot of vendors in the market who look at SOA and say, you know, just start over. Well, that goes against the very tenet and heart of SOA. It's about reusing what you have. It's about service enabling your Z application, your SAP application, or your Oracle apps. It's about reusing what you have. So make sure you don't throw everything away. Make sure you do a portfolio analysis and understand what is usable. And I think probably the last big don't here is, don't forget to get the right set of skills. Skills are so important. In fact, 56% of our customers say that skills are one of the biggest areas they focus on day one. And these just aren't technical skills, and they're not just business skills. Critical skill here is what we call this T-shaped skill, this person who can bridge business and IT. This is a skill that's in hot demand right now. IBM has introduced a whole curriculum around the skill. We call it service management. And, you know, as IBM deployed SOA, this was probably the number one skill we looked for, someone who could take and define a service in business terms, but then communicate that to the technical community of how to make that a reusable service. So there are many more, but I think, Greg, you know, don't make it about just technology. It's also about your business. Don't throw everything away. Make sure that you're reusing it, and make sure you get the right set of skills.
Okay, it sounds like there's a lot of challenges facing companies today when it comes to SOA. Can you give us some ideas on what some of those challenges are facing companies today and how they can succeed with their SOA?
Yeah, so, you know, I would say there are many more companies who are very successful with SOA. We've got lots of great stories. And to me, the value here is sharing their experiences, because they were early adopters, and how others can learn from what they have learned. And I would say some of the biggest challenges that we just talked about, one are skills. How do you get the right skills? You can partner to get the right set of skills. There are some great training programs that you can use. We as IBM even introduced a game. It's called Innovate, that uses a joystick and very serious gaming technologies to help teach the concepts of a service and a process and how to apply SOA to it. The other thing that I would say is a challenge for companies is the cultural aspects of SOA. You know, SOA by its nature says that you look at your business as a set of horizontal processes, horizontal end-to-end processes. And most companies today do business in a vertical fashion or siloed fashion. So when you start out, you really need to think through what changes culturally in my business to make that process horizontal. I know even at IBM, as we looked at supply chain, not being done in, 72 different divisions, but being done as one supply chain across IBM, obviously causes our businesses inside of IBM to look at it differently. And so make sure as you go in that you think through some of the cultural modifications that you have to manage.
Okay. Sandy, you keep talking about skills when it comes to SOA. Can you define that just a little bit more? What do you think the critical skills are required for ensuring SOA success?
Yeah, I mean, there are many, and I wrote about many in the book, but I would say essentially there are three key and core skills. One is a business analyst skill, someone who understands your processes, your business, who can decompose your business into the set of right processes you want to focus on. The second is a core architecture skill, because SOA does have that big A word in it. It does require that you look at the capabilities from an architectural perspective. And then I think the third is this new T-shaped person, a person who can look at the processes, decide how granular that process should be, and how to encapsulate it into a service. I think that that skill is probably a newly formed skill, and we'll see, several skills morph over time, business analysts being business developers, for instance, as they get more power with some of the Web 2.0 concepts, Greg, that we talked about earlier.
Well, that helps a lot. It helps me understand kind of what the skill sets are when you're referring to that. Another one of the topics that you talk about in the book is something called smart SOA. What do you mean by smart SOA?
So smart SOA is about learning from the experiences of others. And given that the real march for SOA on the approach started in 2005, there's a lot of learning out there from those early adopters. And if you're a company out there who's just starting or who's trying to progress, I would say you'd want to do SOA smartly, and that would mean leveraging the best practices of those who went before you. So by smart SOA, we at IBM have defined a maturity model. We have laid out how you progress in that journey. We've laid out some things you should think through on the technology side, but also on the business side. Like what types of governance do you need when you move from your first entry point project maybe to an end-to-end transformational project? So smart SOA is about being smart in the way you deploy, thinking through your simplicity, how you leverage Web 2.0, for instance, thinking through your robustness needs, how scalable does the solution need to be, and thinking through how you take a pilot project, which we would encourage you to do, to a transformational end-to-end project, to one that impacts not just maybe one process in an organization, but multiple. So smart just means making sure you're planning it out, leveraging the experiences of others, and thinking through both the business and IT sides.
One of the things I think everybody's interested in is kind of where SOA is going, what the future of SOA is, and specifically, what are some of the growth industries for SOA maybe that you can see in the coming year?
So I would say that, some of the hot growth industries for SOA right now are government. We're seeing a lot of government uses for efficiency and effectiveness. In the banking and financial markets area, we're seeing a lot of growth there based on the dynamic times that they're facing and the changes in the marketplaces that they're seeing. We're seeing a lot of pickup in retail and in healthcare where and for healthcare, for instance, compliance is a big issue, and SOA can help with compliance. And around retail and how to better service your customer, we're seeing use of SOA in order to better respond to personalization and multi-channel. And how do you really know, what a loyal customer wants and needs? I think looking forward, in 2008 and beyond, we're going to see many more companies adopt. In fact, both Gartner and Forrester agree by end of 2008, almost 80% of new development projects will be done using SOA across the board in multiple industries.
And that growth is going to be across all companies of all different sizes, and also from a global perspective. Is that right?
That is correct. The size of the company really doesn't matter. I worked with a very small company in Germany, less than 12 employees. who leverage SOA to join their product and their solution into Amazon's marketplace. Amazon has web service connections, and they use that web service connection to grow their business. So regardless of your size, SOA truly can help you. You may have a different starting point, but the values of flexibility and cost cutting, I think, apply across the world and to every size of corporation.
So if it crosses all companies and it's going to be a global experience or a global growth experience we see here, can you give us just an idea of where you feel the SOA market is headed in, say, the next 5 years?
Sure. I think that the marketplace is headed to more of a business view of the marketplace. I see business users playing a stronger and stronger role, and IT providing more and more tools that business users will take advantage of. So, for instance, you know, business event processing. How do you, as a business user, take and look at events across your business or activities that are happening? You know, red shoe sales are down here. You're getting reports of, you know, defective products coming in from support. You're having bloggers blog about your problem. How do you take all those different events, all those different things that are happening, and say, wow, you know, maybe I need to, you know, produce more blue shoes and check out the problem that I'm having with my red shoes? So I see more and more of the decisions and more of the flexibility being provided to the business user. And I see that happening in multiple ways that will impact the technology, that will impact the way that we view the further marriage of Web 2.0 and SOA, and further changing the way that we develop new services based on how long we think that service will be used, the consumability needs, and the robustness needs of that particular solution.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sandy. That wraps up our second podcast in a series of three with Sandy Carter. The next and final episode, we'll have her demonstrate some of her most successful customer experiences as they relate to SOA. This podcast series is brought to you by IBM Press. For more information on IBM Press, go to www.ibmpressbooks.com.